Blog Talk Radio.
I want to know, are you ready? America. Thanks for joining us. I want to know, are you ready to take back our country? As the name of this song states, are you ready to join together on common ground? By that I mean God, family, country, constitution. If so, you've tuned into the right place. If not, hang out with us. You may find there's more right in you than you know. I'm Gary Benford, host of United Patriots Uprising, coming to you every other Monday night for 2 hours of guest-driven, conservative-based political talk. It's all about the message, friends, looking to enlighten, edify, and equip, so each and every one of us will be able to engage, expose, and defeat the radical left's Marxist agenda in the arena of ideas, leading to a red tsunami at the polling places. So are you with me, America? If so, strap on your helmet and take up your shield, because we're in a war for the soul of our nation, and we're not about to lose. Socialism, not in our America, not on our watch. No way, no shape, no how.
Hello, America. Hello, America. Once again, glad to be back at you with another episode of United Patriots Uprising with Gary Benford. We do this on the Patriot Nation Radio Network twice a month, two Mondays a month. We'll be on again next week. But boy, do we have a power-packed show for you tonight about what we have to do to save our beloved America. The call-in number, if you want to call in, is 347-637-3942. That's 347-637-3942. Ladies and gentlemen, there's been a series of assaults on our constitutional rights to freedom of speech and to bear arms, which is in order to protect ourselves against government gun tyrannical. We have to deal with that. More than a million illegal aliens have come across our border recently, bringing in who knows what. Child sex trafficking, China virus. I'll stop there. Critical race theory is being shoved down our throats from our schools to the workplaces. It's the mark. Simply replacing their previous hot-button word, class, with race. The politicizing of the virus for the express purpose of destroying our economy and bringing down President Donald J. Trump. The Biden administration pulling us out of Afghanistan militarily. What are we to make of that? Stepping up the assault against Western culture and Christianity. The attacks on our Constitution, the American flag, and the Founding Fathers. Cuba finally has had enough and wants to rid itself of communism. They're begging for our help. Will we give it? Are we going to ultimately bow down to our greatest enemy, which there can be no doubt is China? Or are we going to take it on, which was occurring during the Trump administration? You know the 2020 election was stolen from President Donald Trump. I know the election was stolen. Heck, the Democrats know the election was stolen. So what can we do about it to make sure this doesn't happen again on the state, the local, and the federal levels? These are the things we're going to talk about tonight. And ladies and gentlemen, we are in a war for the soul of this nation. And, you know, it's about saving America now, because we have just basically reached critical point. We have gotten to the point now where we, the people, have to get involved. We have to get involved and get out there and start taking control. And you're starting to see it all across the country. You're starting to see it in the school boards. You're starting to see it on the lower levels of city, town, rural governments, where people who have never, ever been involved in politics are saying, I have to do something, and I have to do something now, primarily because they're saying, if I don't get involved with Donald Trump no longer in the White House, this thing could go down the rabbit hole and we may never come back up. And you've seen it. You've seen what's happened to Cuba. You've seen what's happened to Venezuela. You've seen what happened to North Korea. You've seen what's happened in many, many, many areas. Okay? So this is the deal that we're going through, people. This is the problem that we're having. Okay? This is exactly what we have to deal with. Okay? This is it. So we're asking you to get involved. Please, everyone, get involved. There's nothing else to do but get involved. And what I mean by that is talk to your friends. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to whoever you can talk to. Get involved on your level. Okay? This we have to do. And the reason we have to do it, I say it again, people, is because we are in big, big trouble if it continues down this path. We have no recourse here. Okay? We have no recourse. You're seeing all kind of things that are just taking over and trying to destroy us from within. You know, like, for instance, critical race theory. What's critical race theory? It's nothing more than the latest attempt by Marxists to try and, you know, change the talk in this country and change the political landscape through, as I said, replacing the word class with the word race. And when you do that, what they're trying to do is make everybody think that because America was founded, right, by founding fathers, some who had slaves, never mind that all kind of people had slaves back then, but what they're trying to do is make us think because they had slaves, some of them way back then in the 1700s, that we have to pay the sins for that now, okay, that we need to pay the sins for this now and rip up the Constitution because they didn't know what they were doing, and let's start all over, okay? And start all over, but notice, their way. Start all over with their leftist, socialist, Marxist, non-capital way of thinking. That's what they're looking to do, and that's where they're looking to take us, and we can't go down that path. That is not the path that we can go down, and we really, really, really must step this up and step this up right here, right now. And if you notice, all the things that the administration in place, who should be not even there because the election was stolen, and we'll get into that tonight, all the things that they are doing, none of these things are working for us. None of these things work towards God. None of these things work towards family. None of these things work toward country, and none of these things work toward upholding our Constitution. Everything they're trying to do is looking to bring us down. We will later tonight be talking about cancel culture, which is one of their latest things. And what cancel culture is if you say something that the left finds offensive or that the left doesn't like, they can literally cancel you. And when I say cancel you mean, I mean flat out, absolutely cancel you. In other words, it wouldn't be like, okay, you could say this, you could say that. No. You've heard of busted. You've heard of being punked. You've heard of being outed. This is being canceled, which means we are going to completely shut you off from social media, completely shut you out. So whatever you say will not be heard. It's actually booting people out of the professional and social circle, either online, in person, or in social media. It's aimed at curtailing free speech, and it's a form of censorship, and it's gotta stop. It's an insidious, clever way to boycott people. It's an insidious way to boycott people, to shut them down, trying to force a change of thought or force a change of actions. Now, in pop culture vernacular, cancel culture is like withdrawing support from public figures and companies after they've done something considered objectionable or offensive. Well, what's objectionable or offensive? Well, they want to decide. They don't want to give us the opportunity to decide, or they don't even want to debate it. What they say is, well, you said this, and it's got to go, so you've got to go. Now, Barack Obama warned about this. He warned about the dangers of this thought process. President Trump spoke out against it, seeing it as a dangerous a political weapon that can be used to shame and punish dissenters, which can even cost people their jobs. And they have actually done that. You know, so this is something. This is something that we have to do, people. We have to really work against these things and try to stop this right here. And one of the things you have to do is stop letting them call you a racist, please. Stop letting them call you a racist. If they want to call you a racist, have them define what racist means. What is racist to them? Okay? Have them define racist. Am I a racist because I don't agree with you? Am I a racist because I, don't agree with some of the things that you're saying? Does that make me a racist? Well, I don't think so. And along these lines, to get the show started, I'm going to bring on a person who has been a guest on the show before, and she's an investigative journalist. She's the editor of Uncover DC, and she has been a person who has been looking to get into all the weeds of what is going on in D.C. and making heads of tails about it. I am very happy to bring back to the show Tracy Bean. She hosts the popular podcast Dark to Light, which you can find on all major podcast platforms. Frequent guest on radio and television. Very sought-after speaker who I heard speak. And, boy, is she dynamic, and her organization knows what's going on. Tracy, thank you for coming back.
Hey, Gary. It's so good to be here with you guys tonight. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm well, doing well. Living the dream, as they say.
Well, you know, here's the thing about the dream. We look like we're losing the American dream here. Will you please explain this to people? Please tell them where we are at this point in time. And when you speak, as I've heard you speak, and when you speak, and when you do your podcast, your broadcast, and bring the guests on, the great guests on that you bring, what are you talking about?
Oh, boy. The hot topics right now are absolutely COVID and election integrity. I mean, these are kind of – and, you know, critical race theory, you had Wendy briefly to speak about that as well. It's kind of those three topics that make the rounds because they're the three most important things that are going on right now inside the United States of America. But, you know, the COVID-19 situation and the vaccine is global. You're seeing, I don't know if you saw what's going on down in France over the weekend. There are, you know, global protests against vaccine mandates. And we just covered in depth the lawsuit, temporary injunction to halt the emergency use authorization for all three of the COVID vaccines, as well as FDA approval of those vaccines until such time as adequate medical testing is done to ensure their safety.
I hear you. And how? Tell us how some of this plays in our country, because you have so many people now that are very undecided about what to do. Is the vaccine safe? Is the vaccine not safe? Is it going to hurt me? Is it causing problems? Is it, should I take it? Should I not take it? How can they constitutionally tell me I can't play football, fine me, or not let me sit in a stadium or take away my job if I don't?
Yeah, and I think that that's the biggest problem, and that all centers around something called informed consent. Do you have all of the information necessary to make an informed decision about whether or not you want to elect to undergo a medical procedure, receive a medication, receive an injection, receive a vaccine? And that's at the crux of this lawsuit. And what the America's Frontline Doctors are arguing is that the government, medical institutions, doctors, et cetera, are not providing the American people with the information that they need to make that decision. Now, if you take a look at, you know, all of the research that's been done, all of the things that have been discovered about this vaccine, which the plaintiffs in this lawsuit do not even like to call a vaccine because it does not fit under the CDC's definition of what a vaccine is. But if you look at all the information and you're informed about what's been discovered, and then you decide to take it, that's fine. That's your decision as an American citizen. That's your choice, your prerogative. It's the mandate and the pushing of this inoculation under the emergency use authorization that is really causing the problem here. What they argue is that there never really was a COVID emergency. They go through statistics and numbers about the pandemic, in quotes. They explain, you know, the survivability rate. They explain the fact that it doesn't really affect certain age groups. They explain how there are alternative therapies and treatments available to treat the virus in a successful manner, basically eliminating hospitalization for the most part and keeping, you know, patients out of the hospital and letting them recover at home using certain drugs that have been, you know, basically verboten to speak about for some odd reason. And when those other things are available, it's nearly impossible for them to use an emergency use authorization for this vaccine. So that's one thing. They go through the literature that's now available in studies and from the actual vaccine manufacturers of where the spike protein, how it crosses into the blood, how it can cross the blood-brain barrier. What this vaccine tells your body to do is basically it tells your body to manufacture the spike protein so that your body can mount an antibody response to it. And the spike protein is basically the guts of COVID-19. The vaccine manufacturers say that this does not halt, you know, you can still get COVID, you can still spread COVID. What it does is it lessens the symptoms of COVID. And so because of that, they're arguing that it isn't even a vaccine at all, because most vaccines, especially for the most American citizens, they get a vaccine and they think that it protects them from a disease. That is not the case with the COVID-19 vaccines. So wherever you want to go with this conversation, I'm happy to go, because I'm very well-read on the lawsuit that they filed, so I can speak to it.
I know you are, and I have two questions right off the bat. Question number one, how dangerous, we've talked about this before, please tell the people about what the problem is with a vaccine. Like, it goes in the muscle, it's supposed to stay there. Please tell them about that. And in your findings, how much has this whole virus issue been politicized?
Well, it's been completely politicized, and that is the antithesis of science and medicine. And, you know, a lot of the people that are stepping forward to speak about this now are saying that very thing. There are a lot of experts from, you know, Pfizer, from all different companies, from highly respected medical institutions that are stepping forward to raise some red flags about this right now. You know, I'm not a doctor, so I just know what I've learned through research. But again, what is supposed to happen typically in a vaccination is that the vaccine stays in the muscle and it doesn't go any further than the closest draining lymph node, which is typically in the neck or the armpit near where you get the vaccination. This drug, however, this vaccine it does do that, and it does cross into the blood. And it does, you know, the spike protein does settle into certain organs. One of the concerns that they raise is specifically regarding the reproductive system. In females especially, there's found to be high concentrations of spike protein settling in ovaries, and they argue in the lawsuit that the fact that women are born with a predetermined set of eggs could be a problem moving forward. They do not make any declaration that it definitely is, but they say that there's a protein in this spike protein that is very similar to a protein that is created in the reproductive system, and that the body could potentially accidentally recognize the protein that is naturally created in the body as a spike protein and attack that protein, thereby attacking the reproductive organs, which is, you know, they also have a statistic in there, Gary, that is absolutely terrifying, that women, when pregnant in their second trimester or later, who have gotten this vaccine, 4 out of 5 pregnancies have been lost. That's terrifying to me.
That is
and the scary. Reason for that, it really is. And the reason for that is because it goes at, you know, this the spike protein tends to cause issues with the placenta. And, you know, as an individual, my question is, just as a normal human being walking the earth who knows these things, is we're told how dangerous COVID-19 is. We're told how dangerous the spike protein is. But then we're being asked to inject ourselves with messenger RNA that instructs our body to become manufacturers of said spike protein.
You know, this is scary. Tracy, what would you tell people when they ask you, what should I do? Like, I talked to a person who's a father, took the shot. His father was in his 90s, and he died suddenly. His father seemed to be fine, and they found him on the floor dead. I'm not saying it was because he took the shot, but I talked to this individual yesterday, and I didn't know exactly, you know, what do you tell a person, especially somebody that has taken it themselves?
You know, and this is the thing that really bothers me, and you'll know this if you remember when I spoke at the conference. I said, who in here has taken the vaccine? Because I really wanted to give those people the opportunity to either leave or at least understand that I was about to say things that may make them uncomfortable. And that is like the last thing that I wanted to do. Hold on, Tracy.
Tell people out of room of 300 to 350 people, how many people had taken the shot? I think it was 2.
It was 2.
There you go.
Yes. Yes, it was 2. 2 people had taken it. And, you know, personal decisions, we don't know what their underlying health conditions were or what their doctors told them or, you know, what their decision-making was or if they had the information that is now available or was available then. And that's the thing, I think, you know, if you know the science and you understand what's going on and you know, you have the information that these doctors, I call this lawsuit basically a textbook on the COVID-19 vaccines and COVID-19 in and of itself through the entire lawsuit in layman's terms for folks so that they understand what is in this lawsuit. So you can go to the website at uncoverdc.com and read that. But, you know, the thing about it is if somebody has, there are right now, there's a lot of research being done for sort of like antidotes in a way for people to at least give them the fighting chance to potentially keep at bay whatever damage could potentially be done or help their bodies to get through it. And a lot of people have gotten the vaccine and haven't really noticed anything different. It doesn't affect everybody the same, just like COVID-19 doesn't affect everybody the same. But, you know, you could just take a look at the vaccine adverse events reporting system. And a lot of people have been poo-pooing that over the past several months. But if you take a look at what has gone on in that system, that's where individuals or doctors can go to report adverse reactions to vaccines. And the file size of that database in the past, since 2000 and from 2020 even to 2021, it is at least 15 to 20 times the size as it normally is. There are recorded approximately 7,000 deaths at this point that people are claiming are from the vaccine. Now, it is ridiculously difficult to prove, just like you just mentioned, that the unless it happens immediately. However, there are a lot of stories of people getting their first and second dose if they're not having an anaphylactic reaction to the shot, which means they're not like immediately rejecting the shot and having an allergic reaction to it. It's very hard, and doctors are really trying not to, for the most part, pin it back to the vaccine. And you could take a look even at Ron Johnson's panel that he had of vaccine injured people. So forget, you know, put aside for a second the folks who have died. There are people all over this country and all over the world who are suffering neurological disorder from this. They're suffering, children who have been vaccinated are suffering from myocarditis and pericarditis. They're having heart problems. There's all kinds of things happening. And the thing that bothers me the most about it is we are not allowed to talk about that. And we're being now told that the VA is going to force all of its workers to be vaccinated. The federal government is going to force its workers to be vaccinated with a concoction that has never, ever before been used in human beings on the scale, that is brand new, and that is being used under an emergency use authorization for a pandemic. And that is the thing that I think everybody needs to start paying attention to.
Some scary stuff. It really is. It's some scary stuff. Please tell people from your investigation why and how you believe the whole thing has been politicized.
Well, it's clearly been politicized. You know, look, it was used as an excuse to have across-the-board mail-in voting, and we know what kind of problems that caused in the 2020 election. It's been used particularly by Democrat governors to completely lock down the economy, have almost tyrannical rule over citizens in their in the states affected. They'd have big box stores like Walmart open, but small mom-and-pop stores unable to open their doors. It's been used as sort of a tyrannical stranglehold over the American people. It's been used as a fear tactic to scare people into submission. It's been used to turn citizens against one another. If you're not wearing a mask, then you want to kill my grandma type thing. It's just been used as a global power grab, basically. And if you can't see that, I'm really hoping that people can take a few steps back and look at it from above, because that's exactly what's happened. And, of course, one political party, being the Democrats, has held on to this vaccine and this virus as a way to cudgel everyone else around them. Go no further, Gary, than just, a week ago? What did we see in Texas? We saw these Democrats get on this plane, maskless, completely maskless, apparently, supposedly, all vaccinated. And what happened on that plane?
Yeah.
A lot, 12 of them, I believe, have come down with COVID.
Right. Yeah. And again, people, listen to what she's saying. You had all these Democrats running away from Texas. That's what you see. They're running out of Texas. So they don't want to have this discussion about having real election integrity. So they leave the state. They're on this plane having a great time. You got all these people come down with it. When we were at the convention in South Carolina, you had 350 people from Thursday to Sunday, two masks, nobody got sick.
Nobody did. And listen, I'm not debating with anybody that if the virus doesn't exist. Of course it does. Of course it does. There are ways to protect yourself so that you don't get sick the same way you do during a nasty flu season or elsewhere. But I will tell you, after speaking to several immunologists, virologists, people who run huge health systems. I mean, I've spoken to so many different people. The thing that has prolonged this for as long as we've been dealing with it, it's never going away, never going away. It's just not. It's going to be in circulation, just like swine flu, H1N1, any other virus that comes, is that we have locked people into their homes, not allowed them to interact with the outside world, basically depleted their immune system of any sort of fight or flight mechanism against any virus out there. You know, we're seeing an influx in schools now of RSV. I don't know if you've ever heard of that virus. It's basically the common cold, but it can be very deadly for young babies or elderly adults. And it's usually suppressed very easily. But because everybody's been locked away wearing masks, and we can talk about masks because they've not been, put out there dealing with the everyday viruses that they see. So by locking people away and not allowing the virus to do its thing and peter out once it's gotten to enough hosts, we have prolonged this for a year longer than it should have been. It should have been, they were trying to not overwhelm the health system. Remember, 2 weeks to slow the spread?
Yes.
That was the whole goal, was so that the health systems were not overwhelmed with very, very ill patients when they didn't know very much about this virus at all. And I have some friends who have it right now that I'm friendly with, And it's not fun, Gary. It is not a fun thing to go through.
I understand. I know people, including relatives, that have gone through this, and it's rough. It really is.
Yeah.
But we
yeah.
have a country, and there are things that people, you have to understand, the mask is more dangerous than it helps. You are breathing in bad stuff. What, you know, we have survived almost 300 years because, by the grace of God, our bodies are designed to adjust to all kinds of these things. And all, as you said, Tracy, is forcing people to do is to not be able to make the internal adjustment necessary to ward this off.
Correct. That's exactly right. Yes. And, you know, look, your immune system does a great job. I have friends that are, you know, one of my dear friends, several blood transfusions, several surgeries on their intestines. It causes a lot of problems. You know, some people get very, very ill, but in the vast majority of people, the vast majority, 99.7% of people will make it through COVID. If they, especially with the early treatments that are available that are verboten, again, like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and remdesivir, which is a little bit more widely used now. But it's interesting how nobody's allowed to speak about any treatment. You know, you can't talk about some new, you know, studies that came out and prove that something worked to treat COVID. It's as though they want it to be horrible for people. They don't want people to get the help they need. It's very strange to me. I don't understand it. And, you know, they even go into the accuracy of the PCR test in this lawsuit and how even those are being used under emergency use authorization. And the CDC just came out today and said, or yesterday maybe, and said, you know, we're going to revoke this emergency use authorization on the PCR test December 31, and you guys are going to have to use other methods to test for this. And the key language in that, Gary, so that we can differentiate between this and the flu. So wait a second. What does that mean for all the people that's a...
Hello? Hello?
What happened?
Tracy, what happened? Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. Who do I have?
This is General Flynn.
Oh, hi, General Flynn. Gary Binford, you're just... Tracy was speaking, and she just flat out disappeared. So
I'm back.
Oh, you're
hi,
back.
General.
Okay, look.
Tracy
okay.
does that. Tracy does that at times. She has that capability.
General, thanks for
coming on.
Well, hold on,
listen,
Tracy.
Listen, I'm going to say goodbye so that you can interview the amazing General Flynn. I'm certainly not taking that seat.
Okay, and Tracy, you going to hang out? Because I may be able to bring you back. You want to hang out a little more, Tracy, and hang around?
I will. You know what? I'll sit in the background and listen for a little bit, and then
Thank
I'll jump
you.
Off.
Thank
Gary.
You. Okay. Thank you very much. General Flynn.
How did I face you? Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, you just popped out of nowhere, and this was kind of interesting, but retired Army general with more than 33 years of military service, which was capped by being named as the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is the nation's highest serving military intelligence officer. Retiring and becoming a private citizen in 2014, General Flynn served in a variety of educational, business, and nonprofit roles. Among them, something he continues to do, support our veterans' organizations. He went on to serve as foreign policy advisor to several Republican presidential candidates in 2016, including, I think, with Scott Walker, Ben Carson, Ted Cruz, and Donald Trump. And then he was appointed and served as the National Security Advisor to President Donald J. Trump in January of 2017. He should still have that job, and Donald J. Trump should still be in the White House. We know the story. We don't have to go all into it, but less than a month later, General Flynn was put through an ordeal that no United States citizen should ever have to endure. We know the story. We know what they tried to do. They wanted Trump. They couldn't get Trump. Flynn would not serve him up. General Flynn remained strong, went through the ordeal. Only he and his family knows what it meant. But he came out on the right end of things because on Thanksgiving, November 25th, 2020, fitting day, President Trump pardoned him for something that he didn't even need to be even worried about going to jail about. He has said two things recently when he's out on tour right now speaking about a saving America. The truth on these elections will come out. Bad news doesn't get better with time. And his big message is local action has a national impact. I am pleased to bring to the show Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. How are you?
Well, I'm doing good, Gary. Thank you so much for that great introduction and really for all you guys do to get the message out. And I was listening to a little bit of your interview with Tracy Beans, who I'm a big fan of. She's terrific, and she's right on the money in all the things that she was talking about. So, yeah, thank you very much, and I appreciate you highlighting that phrase, local action has a national impact, because that's my big goal right now across the country is to get people fired up in their towns, in their parishes, their cities, and in their counties and communities to get involved more than they ever have, because that's one of the only ways that we're going to take this country back is really at the grassroots level. And I firmly believe that. And I know that there's a lot of people that are starting to do things that they weren't doing in the past. You know, they were sitting on the couch or they were working hard, you know, and just trying to make ends meet. But now they're looking at what it is that you know, we've taken for granted for so long, and people are getting involved in their communities like they never have. And I've seen a lot of great examples of that all across the country. So thanks for having me on for a little bit here on your show.
Thank you for coming on. And when I heard you down at Rock the Red, your message, exactly what you just said. So before you tell the people what you're telling them now out as you stump with Gene Ho, who will be on later, and a couple other people, that you're trying to save America, please tell the people what rabbit hole are we down? How bad is it, and how did we get here?
Yeah, so, I mean, in brief, we have taken for granted everything in our lives that we have been given, and this really goes back decades. You know, where we started to see this shift in the country, and I saw it clearly in the latter part of my military career, and then certainly over the last few years, but this shift towards socialism, particularly at the federal level, the bureaucracy of our government that is so bloated and has grown so big over the last really two decades. I mean, we're talking about a federal government that has grown probably times five, in some cases times 10, in terms of the size and the scale of the federal government in Washington, D.C. So we have grown and grown and grown, and what that has done is it's taken more responsibility up to the federal level and taken that responsibility from really those of us as individuals. The whole country, our nation was really designed on individual liberties. And what we're now experiencing is really what I call it's a word that most people don't even have in their lexicon. And that's an oligarchy, meaning we are now a nation where we're controlled by the few of the many instead of, you know, the many controlling the few. And I think what's happened is we have drifted towards socialism in the last 20 years, and really in the last probably 6 months or so, I think people are seeing we're no longer drifting, we're moving rapidly towards really a communist takeover of our federal government, and we're seeing all these various things that are happening, you know, with COVID is one of them, the election fraud that occurred, and that's becoming more and more clear, particularly with the Arizona audit and the hearing that was just held a little over a week ago. And just some of the other things that we're seeing, some of the executive orders that we're seeing coming out of this administration, some of the things that we're seeing inside of our military, these socialization experiments, particularly in our military, which is really concerning to me because the military is designed to fight and win nations' wars, period. Not to be a social experiment to culturalize and really get into this sort of touchy-feely, structure instead of a warrior and a war-fighting capability. So, I mean, we're moving more rapidly than I believe that they would be able to move. But I think part of it is now, and this is because they, you know, they have control with the media. They have censorship going on. There's a lot of political correctness within the government. And there's a lot of other aspects of what we are facing. But at the end of the day, what we still have is we still have people like you, stations like this, outlets, a lot of podcasts around the country, a lot of conservative voices. And we have a lot of Americans, an awful lot, millions and millions of Americans that are now engaged and engaged at the local level. And that's why I keep harping back to this idea about local action having a national impact. People have to get involved in their communities. They have to decide, you know, what is it that I need to do as a responsible citizen, as a responsible American to help my community? And I can't emphasize that enough, Gary.
Yeah, General Flynn, I agree with you because my motto has always been just get one, flip blue to red. And I've always believed you. This is how the Democrats did it, but it took them 50 years. But you get one, and they get one, and they get one, and that's how you change hearts and minds. But there's so many people that were so used to President Trump reaching thousands, reaching millions, and he was going to do it, and he, you know, and we're just not so used to being activists, and so many people just think, what can my one voice mean? What can my one voice do? Please break it down for them so they understand why you getting involved on your school board, you getting involved at City Hall, you getting involved in the Parent Teachers Association, you getting involved with either the people in your church or the people you go bowling or the people you go to ball games and movies with. They explain to them why each person, if we get involved, can really make this work.
So, you know, let me go back to an event that we had in Tulsa, Oklahoma, back in, I think it was late April. And this was really my sort of first time out really speaking to a larger group of people. It was about, I think we had, I don't know, 5,000 or 6,000 people. And two of the women that attended, they took that message to heart. They were from Iowa, the state of Iowa, and they went back to their state. So these are two young moms, went back to their state. And in their state, there was a mask mandate, just to use masks as an example of sort of the repression of individual liberty. So they had a mask mandate for children in elementary schools, and they both had children in elementary schools. And one of the children, but really it happened to both of them, but one of them had developed a really terrible infection on her face. And instead of the school doing the right thing and just using good old common sense, the school then isolated the child and made the child, like, really made her an emotional wreck. And so these two women said, after they heard our sort of call for get involved, they then started a campaign in the state of Iowa, and they ran that campaign all the way up to the governor of Iowa. And I would say the governor of Iowa, who was someone who I would define as enlightened because she did the right thing. And the governor then signed a law basically outlawing masks for children in elementary schools, and it stopped that nonsense right off the bat. And the other thing I understand is a part of that law is that also outlaws masks for certain other categories of young people that are you know, functioning athletes and stuff like that in the state of Iowa. Those were two moms who were both hardworking moms raising their own children. And they just said, you know what, we're going to step out. We're going to go get involved. They initially engaged in their school department and their school board. The school board wouldn't hear them. So then they went to their congressman, their state-level representative, their state-level senator. They engaged them, and they started to get somebody to listen to them. And they really had their act together. And their whole argument was based on pure common sense and what was right for their children. And to me, I mean, you know, it was such a moment of pride when I met both of them, and I just met them both out in Anaheim this past weekend. Again, both those moms, we had them back out to basically tell their stories because they're just two young ladies, young moms, who, like everybody else out there who's trying to raise their kids and do the right thing and you know, work jobs and all that kind of stuff, they just decided we're done. We're done with the nonsense. We're going to go ahead and start to protect not only our own children, but all of the children in our community. And lo and behold, in about a 30-day period of time, they were really able to run it up the flagpole, and they got the governor of Iowa to sign a law. And to me, that's really the model of what it is that we need across the country. People down in their communities, school boards, town councils, parish councils, whatever, getting involved and showing up. And if you don't like something, stop complaining about it. Don't go off and complain about it to everybody. Go and do something about it. We're the ones that put these people on these school boards. We're the ones that put these people on these town councils. We're the ones that put these people in Washington, D.C. So stop complaining about it and go do something about it. And the best place to act and to operate is at the local level. Nobody, you know, you can't control certain things in your life, but the things that you can control is what you do, particularly in your local town. And to me, that is the most vital thing in a constitutional republic that is based on individual liberties that we can do to help our country continue to maintain this beautiful experiment in democracy.
You're so right about that. There's so many people that are talking about, even here in New York, how they went down and attacked the school board. And when I mean attack, realize the school board is all liberal. They were trying to put in a critical race theory, and they ran against them and just realized all you need is 1,000 votes to vote those people out, because not everybody votes on the school board. You are so right. General Flynn, I know you have thoughts on Afghanistan, whether we should be there or not. I know you understand about the Constitution, the flag, our founding fathers, and the attacks. I know you know that Cuba is crying out for help from us. Are we going to do it? And I know you know China's our number one problem right now. But my friends' heads will explode if you don't tell us what is going on with election fraud. What do you think is going to happen? Where does it stand? And did you ever think this could have ever gotten this far? Why?
Yeah, I never believed that there would be this type of theft at this level of our election system, meaning that the presidential election for the United States of America, for the presidency of the United States, would be stolen. I mean, there has been election fraud for well over 100 years. There's a lot of documented fraud cases and elections that have been overturned in counties and states and even at the federal level, we've never had it where the presidency of the United States of America has gone through this kind of a thing. Now, I will tell you that way back, last summer of 2020, there was a lot of discussion about how much fraud is built into these mail-in ballots. So, where are we to, from last year to now and everything that we have been exposed to and we have experienced, when we're watching these audits or the discussions going on in several states around the country, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Georgia, and we are watching really the brave senators from Arizona, particularly Senator Karen Fann, who's the president of the Arizona State Senate. I really give that particular body a lot of creds for just stepping up and taking on and doing a full forensic audit of one county. It's one of the largest counties, not only in Arizona, but in the country in terms of numbers of voters, registered voters, and people that typically vote. And I think the number writ large for the voters in Maricopa County, Arizona, was 2.1 million. And I think that there was like 1.8 million mail-in ballots. And just some of the initial preliminary findings of what was discovered in this audit, this forensic audit, we're only talking about the outcome of the whole Arizona election was only like, I think it's 10,400 was the difference between what they said Biden won by over Trump. And now we're talking about tens of thousands of fraudulent ballots. Some cases were never requested, yet they voted, right? I think the number there is about 74,000 ballots. It's very clear there is a subpoena that the state Senate gave the Maricopa Election Board of Commissioners, and they're in violation of the subpoena because they don't want to turn over basically evidence that's going to continue to show additional fraud. Now, one of the senators out there, Senator Borelli, Sonny Borelli, I think is his name, Senator Sonny Borelli, he was on a taped interview immediately afterwards, I think last Friday, where he was talking about, because he's in conversations with other elected officials in other states, because people in Pennsylvania, people in Georgia, people in Michigan that are elected officials are talking to these guys and gals in Arizona saying, okay, we're considering doing something similar, an audit in our state. What do you recommend? How do you recommend it? So I know that there's good crosstalk going across the country by some of these senators in Arizona to other legislatures in some of these other states. And I believe what we're going to end up finding out is that a massive fraud occurred. Now the next question is, what happens?
Yes.
What are the scenarios? What are the options? You know, if in fact, you know, there is clear fraud, and let's say Arizona, you know, basically turns their electors back from Biden to Trump. What if the same thing happens in Georgia? What if the same thing happens in Pennsylvania? We have never been in this place before, Gary, and for all your listeners, the country's never been here before. So there's going to have to be some serious soul searching, both by the elected officials, particularly in states, and definitely all the way up to the Supreme Court on the judiciary side. You know, and I think, like a lot of other Americans, we've lost a lot of faith in the institutions of government, particularly the judiciary, because the Supreme Court on the various cases that did go forward, you know, they're not going to be the ones that are going to rule on the outcome of an election. But what they're supposed to do is not let the Constitution fragment or fray. They're supposed to keep the Constitution bound very tightly, and they're supposed to follow the rule of law as it stands in the Constitution. And I think that I believe, like a lot of other Americans, that the judiciary, in this case the U.S. Supreme Court, they reneged on their obligation to do that in some of these cases. Instead of looking at any evidence, they just looked at technicalities, and they said, oh, you don't have standing, so therefore we're not going to review the evidence, and they just basically kicked the can down the road. So we're in a place where we've never been. I do believe that massive, massive fraud is going to be proven. It already has been in Arizona, so there's no more conspiracy theory. This is you could call this a conspiracy instead. And I am hopeful that I know, Gary, that the truth is going to come out, and I am hopeful that people will see it for what it is and make the right decisions. And those right decisions are going to be more difficult than I think people understand, but they're going to have to be made in order to keep this country tight and bound together and united, because people are upset about this thing. I think that the Democrats felt like this whole argument would be dead by now and we'd be focused on other things. And in fact, it's probably the number one issue at the top of everyone's list of things to fix is the election integrity of the United States election system and processes that we have. And I'd say that going into 2022, it's going to be hard to get to 2022 unless we resolve election 2020 first. And I believe that. And I know in a lot of the conversations I've had with many, many Americans around the country, they feel the same way.
I understand what you're saying, but you know, there's that old saying, I won't use the bear in the woods analogy, but I'll use the one, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's there to hear it, does it really make a sound? What I am so concerned about is who is going to reveal the fraud? The media won't do it. The courts have already, they won't even listen to it. In other words, we could have mounds and mounds and mounds, and I do want you to address Dominion, but we could have mounds and mounds of all kind of fraud. But if, like, CNN, MSNBC, and all the alphabets won't do it, the courts have said, no, it's too hot for us to handle. How is this going to get out? Now, I agree with you. I really believe something is going to happen. I call it God's hammer. Something is going to happen to change the equation, and then the floodgates will open to all of this. But please address Dominion. We understand about ballot harvesting and all the stuff they try and do and everything they're trying to do as far as, you know, trying to keep where you don't have to have a photo ID and stuffed animals and cats and dogs and dead people are voting. But address Dominion, because that seems to be a huge problem.
Well, and it's not just Dominion. There's other machines that are used around the country. There's actually three three different types that I'm aware of. Dominion is one. ESNS is another. And then HART, H-A-R-T, is another system. And part of it is they, you know, these machines, they use very similar software. It's called Smartmatic software. And all that means is that there are machines or machinery, and everybody that voted knows what I'm talking about, that you go in and you vote, you know, using a machine. The machines calculate, you know, the outcome of the numbers that are being processed through them. And, you know, and the argument is that these things called algorithms that change the outcome if the algorithms are not right inside of the machine. So what that means, though, is like, it's like if you go and order some kind of, you know, salad at dinner, right? You go out to order some kind of salad and you say, I want it to be a little bit more spicy, or I want it to be less spicy. So you add this, or you add that. Well, that's kind of what an algorithm is in a machine. You put in different ingredients into a machine, and those things are, it's called an algorithm. That's ingredients inside a machine. And you change the ingredients in that machine to make the outcome, to make the taste or the flavor a little bit different.
Right.
And that's very, very, it's very easy to do. It's done routinely. We know that they have done that in the past. All you got to do is ask some folks down in Texas. That happened in 2018. It's happened elsewhere in the country. So the machines are part of the problem. And with all of the noise that's been out there, you know, people in this country, they're just not going to trust it. And when you can manipulate the algorithms, when you can manipulate or change the ingredients for the machine to act a little bit different, to taste a little bit different, to use the metaphor of food, because that's kind of what it is, well, then you can't trust the system to be fair. You just can't trust it to be fair. And we may have to go to a election system where it is pure paper ballots. We've done it in the past. We can do it no problem. And we have to get rid of these machines so they're basically, people will have trust and confidence in the elections that we have. And we may end up having to do that. I really do believe that in Mike Lindell's case, and I know Mike's got a cyber symposium coming up 10 through 12, I believe, August, where he's going to lay out a whole bunch of additional evidence. And I understand the evidence that he's going to lay out is pretty extreme. It's to the point where he's actually going to put out some of the things that he's been talking about and that are in his various cases that he's fighting. So I just think that people are at a place now where we just don't trust these machines. It doesn't make any difference what their names are. It doesn't make any difference what's inside of them. People now know that the machines don't, you know, they can be manipulated, and that's clear. That's come out. And that's come out in previous elections as well. And the last thing I'd say about machines is that prior to the 2020 election, prior to the 3 November 2020 election, the Democrats were all over the media talking about, you know, how bad the machines are, and the machines aren't, you know, they're going to manipulate the vote. They're going to be a problem. And then all of a sudden, after the 3rd of November, if you talk about the machines, they just, you know, the media, the big media, mainstream media, you know, they beat you about the head and shoulders. Let me address one other thing, Gary, real quick, because this has to do with the media. You know, you say that the media is not going to allow us to get the word out or do this. And I disagree, because the mainstream media is dying. It is dying. And what's growing is markets like yourself, okay, and many, many other podcasters out there, and you just had one on there, Tracy Beans. I mean, her podcast, Frank and Beans, is booming, and there are plenty of others, and yours is as well, and yours will continue to grow, because you're bringing on not only guests who are trying to get the truth out and expose the truth, but you're also talking about issues that people care about, and you're raising issues that are important to basically just you know, good old common sense Americans that are trying to, you know, get through every day with their families. And because that's the majority of America, the majority of America. So the mainstream media has taken for granted the Americans, and they beat on us You know, when they beat on President Trump, when they persecuted me in the media, and they continue to do that, when they persecute me, what they don't realize is that they're actually persecuting the president of the United States and the presidency of the United States, particularly in Donald Trump's case. I mean, they're just beating on the American people when they beat on the person who they duly elected to be president, not only from 2016 to 2020, but also in this last election. I mean, I'm gonna put some information out here in the next couple of days about some indisputable facts about things that we know for certain that Donald Trump achieved. You know, highest Hispanic, highest African American vote ever for a Republican. The fact that he got, you know, he got 18 of 19 bellwether counties, and it hasn't been since 1896 that an incumbent has been beaten, right? I mean, ever, when you get those kind of stats. And there's a whole bunch of other indisputable facts that you cannot argue, because we're pulling those facts right off of websites of state and county websites, because it's just the way it is. I mean, that's what the numbers show. And when you look at what Trump achieved in this last election, you know, and you say to yourself, I mean, Biden got more votes in certain states than Barack Obama did, and I mean to the tune of hundreds of thousands or millions in some cases. I don't think so. Not legitimate votes. So that's kind of where we are, and we're going to have to resolve this as we go forward.
Yes, and you know, you opened up something. You went to the media. Since you went there, I was eventually going to ask you this question once we got into that. You have stated, now we have OAN, we kind of have Newsmax, Fox News owes American apology. Will you please explain why?
Yeah, I mean, Fox News called Arizona for Biden. I mean, first, why they called him so early, you got to ask the people at Fox. I don't know that. You know, maybe I think it was Brett Baer that actually said it at that time. Could have been somebody else, but I think hearing Brett Baer call it. And so I think Fox owes an apology to Trump, and actually owes an apology to the American people, because, you know, what they did was they made a call on something that they frankly didn't have good data on, or if they had good data, then I would suspect all of their data from this point on. And now what we know for certain, because it just came out in the preliminary, this is only the preliminary audit findings that Senator Fan held this hearing on the other day. What we know for certain was that fraud did occur. There was definitely mail-in ballot fraud. There was definitely paper-based problems that we have, and there's clear machine problems that were fraudulent. And now the big question is, and she'll find this out, and that's why I think she had the Senate Judiciary Chairman there from the Arizona Senate. You know, was there criminal behavior behind this? So I think, you know, if Fox were just to come out and say, hey, look, we watched the hearings just like everybody else watched the hearings, we may have been mistaken and we may have pulled the switch too soon and called the election at the time. And they probably did that. In fact, they didn't probably do that. I believe they did it. And they called the election too soon. And I think what they need to do is they need to do some reflection and look at how they make decisions about some of these elections that were involved. And now the problem here is that it's too late, you know, for Arizona. But had they paid attention to what was really happening, because I don't know. My gut tells me that something else was in the works there, and I don't know what it is. I don't have any insight. I just know what I heard in this hearing last week, like everybody else that was watching it. And when I think about, you know, what happened that night, election night, where it was called so early, Arizona was called so early, and it kind of freaked everybody out in the country that pays attention to election night reporting, when all of a sudden Fox calls Arizona, which is way out there in the west, you know, the western side of the country, and we still got voting and counting going on the eastern side of the country, you know, in the East Coast and in the middle eastern part of the country, you know, Ohio and Pennsylvania and such. And all of a sudden you get a call for Arizona, you kind of go, what's going on here? Something doesn't feel right. Something's not right. And it turns out that it wasn't. And that's why the Senate for the state of Arizona actually has decided to call out Maricopa County for their potential election fraud. And I think what Senator Karen Fann, the president of the Arizona Senate, is going to end up doing is I have a funny feeling that she's going to start, if she hasn't already started, considering preferring charges on some of these county commissioners, because if they don't do what they're being subpoenaed to do, she's going to have to get the attorney general involved, and it's probably not going to be to their advantage. That's for sure. So I just find it that Fox made a mistake. I believe they should own up for it, and you know what? I'll bet you their ratings would go back up. And because the big media markets out there, their ratings are just tubing. And what's growing are these other smaller markets that I call them smaller. I call them the B market area, but the B market is what the American people are listening to.
Yes, you're right about that. General Flynn, we got to address the mothers, because one of the things, as you know, that mothers, it's always about security with them. I think security is a mother's number one issue. And I've had guests on the show, Bill Muckler, John Guandolo, Marines. I did a show, Walking the Wolfman, with Will Figueroa Jr., who was in Afghanistan as a soldier for a long time. And they always told me that the military serves the Constitution. Okay, what happens when you have a situation now where perhaps the higher levels of the military that you came up through and love, I'm not sure about the generals and a lot of people up top, you may have your foot soldiers that may be true, you know, red-blooded American constitutionalists, we fight for this country. What would happen if the hierarchy is controlled by the guy in the White House and something breaks with China or something breaks in the street? Where do the soldiers go?
Well, the number one thing for America, and as it relates to our military as an institution, there's one word, Gary, and that word is trust. The American people, they want to trust our American military, and that trust or that bond of can never be broken, can never be violated, because what is happening is our military as an institution, in order to continue and to thrive, it requires moms and dads out there, particularly moms out there in the country, to allow their sons and daughters to continue to join the military at really young ages. Because when a person joins the military, they might join as a mechanic or an aviator or a surface warfare specialist or a cook or a truck driver or an infantryman. But when they actually sign on the dotted line, Gary, what they're signing is they're signing up to sacrifice their very life for this country if called upon to do so, if necessary, and deployed somewhere, overseas by whatever administration's in power. So trust is an element that we can never violate. What I don't like to see is I don't like to see a sense of political correctness in our senior military leaders. And I do know that we have great, great leaders out there. We have great soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines. We have superb non-commissioned officers, superb chief petty officers, right? A master sergeant, sergeants, first sergeants out there, probably the greatest rank as a first sergeant. So we have great men and women that serve. What we have to be very cautious of is these military leaders, quote-unquote leaders, that get up to the most senior ranks. If you are serving, in a very key position, and, I know a lot of these guys and gals, they get to a place in their careers where they go, well, I don't really like what I'm here, and I don't like what they're doing, but if I stay in, I can fix it. I think that I can fix it. And I think to myself, and I've had these conversations while I was out, that if you're in a place where you really disagree with what's happening from the political administration, and you're at a very senior level, particularly at the 3 or 4 star level, which is an appointed level by the president. And I was appointed twice and confirmed twice by the full Senate for 2 different 3 star positions. So I know what I'm talking about when I say this. If you're in these places and you have a disagreement with the administration politically, and you feel so uncomfortable about it, you have a responsibility to, one, let your commander know, or your commander-in-chief know, if that's your immediate boss. You have a responsibility to do that. And then you have a responsibility to step down for the good of the country, not just for your own self-respect. And I think that there are times when military leaders don't do that. And I think that they don't do it in some cases for the wrong reason. And it's not to be a showboat out there to resign in protest and what, you know, and make a big deal about it. No, you just have to say, look, I don't agree with these policies. I don't agree with these actions. I mean, I can't imagine the conversations that are being had right now with all of this critical race theory that's going on inside of our military. Again, our military is designed for one purpose only, to fight and win our nation's wars. That's it. Everything else is secondary to getting to that level of readiness, that level of training, that level of preparedness, and that level of physical, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual toughness that we need in everybody that's serving in our armed forces, whether it's active, National Guard, Reserve, doesn't make any difference. They have to have warriors and in the way that we need them in case we do have to go to the gates with countries like China or Russia or some of these other larger nations that have capabilities that are equal to ours and in some cases may even be superior.
General Flynn, that is right on. But, you know, I really appreciate you coming on. Before you go, you got to freestyle. We've talked about internally saving America from within. You got to address, because I know you're talking about it, this saving America from without. You have to address pulling out of Afghanistan, the Cuban people begging us to help them. We want to get rid of communism. America, help us. Are we going to do it?
Yeah.
And the threat of China.
Yeah. So quickly, Afghanistan, I'm going to tell you, people ask me, you know, who had a child killed in action or wounded seriously in action, was it worth it? Their worth is unquestioned. A soldier's worth is unquestioned. A soldier goes where most places, where most people would never go. They do it for reasons that they'll never understand. They do it for policies that they could care less about, and they do it for people that sometimes in some of these countries could care less that they're even there. But they do it because they love our country. They love their fellow soldiers. They love their families. They love their community. So it's always worth the men and women that we do put into harm's way on behalf of our own country because they're just amazing people. Coming out of Afghanistan, where are we? To me, that decision probably should have been made years ago, years and years ago, looking back. And I in my own ways, I gave it a shot. But I will tell you that I think that what we're going to find is we're going to find Afghanistan, like a lot of other empires in the past, Afghanistan's going to rise again and be just another boil on the soil of the world that will have its own challenges in the coming years here. And not, whether or not we find ourselves back there or whether or not things emanate from there, it's hard to see. But I would tell you that the threats that exist over in Afghanistan remain. And the people of Afghanistan and the military of Afghanistan that we've trained, you know, whether they're, you know, trained and ready to do the kind of jobs that they need to do, you know, I can't put my finger on it today. I'm uncomfortable answering whether or not we should have been there in the first place. But because I've spent the better part of 5 years of my life in places like Afghanistan and or Iraq, so I there's a lot of sweat over there. But it doesn't matter because I do know that what will end up happening is really it's sort of on God's time, and we're going to find out. We're going to find out here within the next 6 months to a year just how things play out. Now, in terms of Cuba is the people of Cuba are not waving American flags or screaming for freedom because they need another COVID shot or they don't want a COVID shot.
There you go.
Which is what the administration and people in the administration tried to say right off the bat. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with their cry for freedom. And I think it was even today or yesterday, you had groups of them in front of the White House, you know, basically protesting this administration's response, which from the media and the White House, it's been a bit muted. Whenever somebody, particularly people that are this close to our own borders, in this case Cuba, are crying out for freedom, we need to figure out innovative ways. We need to figure out ways to step up, to speak out what it is that they are, what they desire, which is freedom. I mean, it's been, you know, the better part of 60 years or more that the Cuban people have been under the thumb of a tyrannical dictator and of communism. And, you know, if people want to know what does it feel like, you know, listen to these people to live in a communist country right next door to America. What might it feel like to live in a communist country right here in America if we're not careful? So we just have to be very conscious about what's happening with the Cuban people, and we have to be very vocal. And I think that there are senators, and I think that there's representatives, certainly at the federal level, that should speak out more about what's happening there. And we need to give these people their due and their time of day. How the White House or how our military or Department of Defense may respond to it, I'll leave that question up to them to answer. But you know, I'm not one for more ventures. I am sort of an anti-war guy, actually. But you know, but if it's necessary, then it's necessary. If it meets foreign policy objectives and goals that we're trying to achieve. In this case, I think that there's got to be a lot more economic and a lot more informational activity really by the White House, and I don't see it just yet. Maybe we'll get fooled here and something else will change. In terms of China has three major problems that they're dealing with, but I won't go through all three. Maybe that's for another show. But the one that I'm most concerned about is the Straits of Taiwan and the country of Taiwan and what China's aspirations are for sort of one nation, right, where they believe that Taiwan is part of China, and the people of Taiwan are freedom-loving people. It's a great country. They got great people. It's a great economy, but yet China wants Taiwan, and I think that we're going to find in the next in the very near future here. I really feel this more than I've ever felt before, that I feel like China is going to take advantage of the ambivalence of our current administration in terms of foreign policy outreach on a variety of things, and also demonstration of strength and commitment to allies around the world. That ambivalence could turn into an action taken by China to do something to really just test the American resolve, particularly in the Indo-Pacific region of the world. And that's something that there's been a lot of rhetoric talk out of the Chinese leadership about Taiwan recently. There's been a lot of tactical moves like overflights, military overflights. There's been a lot of military operations off the eastern coast of China as it relates to the Straits of Taiwan and in the Sea of Japan area there. And a lot of other activity down in the Vietnam Sea, the South China Sea, the Philippine Sea area region. Been a lot of military activity, more so than I think we've seen in the last 10 years, probably in just the last couple of months. So I think we have to pay very close attention to what China may or may not do, and we have to be very smart about actions that are directed to try to draw us into something. We have to be really, really smart about that. That's where I pray that our military leaders, in terms of their advice to our political leaders, are really thoughtful and considerate about all of the things that we know China is capable of doing.
Thank you very much, because all of this stuff, this is all just telling everybody why we need Donald Trump back in the White House, because the administration, they can't handle any of this. And China wants Taiwan. Unfortunately, I think China wants the United States, too. And this administration, yeah, I think, would just bend over and give it to them. So we've got to get this election cleaned up. I really appreciate you coming on. I also thank that you say you left some stuff on the table for another show. I'm going to hold you to that. Also, please tell people how they can reach you. But before you do that, I have to ask you this question. When you shot the cannon at Rock the Red, and I was all dressed up, and you were on your way inside, and you would stop taking pictures with everybody, and Maria Booz had a camera. I said, Maria, I want to jump in here and take a picture. And I jumped in there with you, and you put your thumb up. Your boy's in black. If you had put your thumb down, what would have happened to me?
You're good. You know what? I'll tell you what. You, Gary, are a great American patriot, and I think that your audience knows exactly the kind of guy that you are. You love this country as I do, and I would just tell you that that particular event that we had, Rock the Red, in Greenville, South Carolina, was a terrific event. I thoroughly enjoyed getting to know you and meeting some other people there, and getting the message out about what we talked about earlier. Local action has a national impact. So how do people get a hold of me? They can go. I'm the chairman of America's Future, and we are out there helping Moms for America. We're out there helping school boards. We're out there trying to educate people on how to get involved in their precincts to do volunteer activities. We're out there doing as much as we can to educate this country about our Constitution. And so the way to get a hold of me is www.americasfuture.net, americasfuture.net. And I appreciate you letting me highlight that and having some time with you this evening, having this great conversation. And we'll do it again.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, General Flynn. I will shoot, for the next week, I will be posting quotes and trying to get what you had to say to as many Americans as possible. Thank you. God bless you. God bless your family. And thank you for your service.
God bless, Gary. Thank you.
There you have it, everybody. Lieutenant General Michael Flynn did not bend, did not break, did not serve up Donald Trump. If he had, he'd be loved by the left. But it cost him a lot of money. It cost him a lot of heartbreak. But he held strong, and we thank him for that and his service. And along those same lines, what General Flynn is doing, he's going out talking about saving America, and also with him on some of these stops is a friend of the show. In fact, Gene Ho has been on this show so many times, he could probably host the show and I could just take some time off. This is probably number seven for Gene. Gene Ho was the personal photographer to Donald Trump during the 2016 presidential election. He wrote a book, Trumpography, about it with some great pictures and about his year with President Trump. And now he's currently the photographer for Diamond and Silk. And he's out with General Flynn talking about saving America. I welcome back a friend of the show, Gene Ho. How you doing, Gene?
Hey, thank you. I am doing great. And you never know. Sometimes you might need an assistant host and when you go on vacation. So I might be right there. I might be the man for the job. You never know.
Well, you're going to be the next mayor of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So I don't know. How many hats can you wear? And you're taking shots and everything and going around. So please tell the listening audience. I know you. I think you're in Oklahoma. You guys were in Tucson, I think, in Arizona. You're going around. Tell them about what this is, what you're doing. Sometimes you're with General Flynn, sometimes you're not. Tell them what your message is to America.
Well, first of all, I was listening in with General Flynn's interview, and I tell you what, that man would make a great Secretary of State because he knows his stuff. And I just looking forward to Donald Trump being back in office and seeing what America has in store for General Flynn. But I have to tell you, this is a movement going on in America. I've been on tour with General Flynn with two different touring companies, if you could say it that way. With General Flynn was with Clay Clark's event, so we just got back from Anaheim. And then the next one in August is going to be with General Flynn in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So been traveling around with the general, and I tell you what, the crowds are amazing. Gary, the last one in Tampa, 10,000 people. The one going to be in Grand Rapids, Michigan, will be 8,000 people going to see the general and other people like Mike Lindell. It's a movement that's taken over America, and it's really happening.
This is we need this because they're trying to silence us. They're trying to do this cancel culture, which former Senator Ted Harvey will come in and talk about, and they're trying to silence us, take away our media outlets. Like if you say something they don't like on Facebook, they want to shut you down completely off of the system, you know. So tell us what is in your message.
The message is basically what General Flynn has been talking about. You know, making America great begins at your own home. And I'm running for mayor of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and it's been going well. But the important thing for everybody is not so much going in there to win, but going in there and putting yourself out there. If it's for running for school board seats, if it's for city council, if it's for mayor of where you might live in your own home, small town. The thing is, we need to get out there and we need to put ourselves out there. And it's not so much to win. Yes, winning would be great, but it's to inspire 10 other people to say, listen, if Gene does it, you know, Gene, if so-and-so does it, you know, it inspires other people to say, you know what, I'm going to try it. I'm going to do it too. And that's the more important message, is for all of us to get out there and do our part by figuring out where we fit in this. And people fit in different ways. I mean, with my campaign, we just had a bunch of people just volunteer, and they're getting involved. But it's a matter of getting off and just saying, listen, what can we do personally? And that's basically the message with General Flynn, with me, and it's working. People are going out there and making a difference.
It's so necessary, Gene. I asked you this before. After the election, you weren't quite hearing buyer's remorse. The last time you were on my 1 year anniversary show 3 weeks ago, you were starting to see buyer's remorse. Is that buyer's remorse with Biden in the White House needle still pointing upwards?
Yes, and it was interesting. It was almost an embarrassing moment, because when we first talked about this, you said, Gene, have you seen buyer's remorse out there on Biden? And I said, no, I really haven't seen much of it. And then the interesting thing about it is, you know, maybe 3 months later we talk again, and then you ask me the same question. I said, yes, I do see it. And the interesting thing about it, I traveled all around the country multiple times for the last 3 years. When this last stop with General Flynn and myself and Lindell, this was in Anaheim, California. I am telling you, we were there at the hotel, other attendees as well. And we were openly in California wearing MAGA gear, wearing our lanyards that said what we were doing. There was no, I'm telling you, there was no sense of people coming up to us and saying, what are you doing wearing those hats or whatever? People now are really they really are like, you know what? Maybe these people have a point. You know, maybe they're taking away our freedoms along with theirs. When they were cheering us on because they were taking away President Trump's Twitter account, and when they were banning us on Facebook, a lot on the left was cheering it. They were really cheering it. But the thing is, it's different now. Last event we did, even though he is not a Trump supporter from what I hear, Robert Kennedy Jr. was there, because they're taking away his freedoms. They're taking away his social media, and he's a Democrat. So I'm seeing major buyer's remorse, and I'm seeing a change in America.
This is so important that it continues on this upswing, because we have to do it now, because Donald Trump is no longer in the White House for the time being. He belongs there. We know the election was stolen. Along those lines, you were in Arizona a while back, and you've been going around. What are you hearing about, in general, about the election fraud, about election integrity? What do you think may happen, and do you kind of sense that this evidence is about to come out and hopefully the dam will break, or do you think that there's going to be amongst the left and the mainstream media circle the wagons to try and still keep this from ever reaching the American public?
Well, one thing I could tell you, and I will break it, so to speak, on your show, but I was just in Arizona. I spoke to people, named people. Well, won't name them, but name people like you'll instantly recognize these people. And I can tell you from the people that I've talked to that you would know who they are, that they were, I won't quite say it was watermarks, but it's something similar to watermarks, was on some of the ballots in some of the counties, where basically if you have a county that every one of those in that county had ballots that were tagged similar to watermark, but a very, very much more complicated than that. And there are going to be people cold busted because when those come back and they have the they don't have watermarks on them, that means someone tampered with the election. And so it's all going to come out. And that's why you have people like General Flynn empowered, because these things are going to come out. They're going to come out to light. So I'm happily doing what I'm doing right now, and there's going to be things coming out. It's a lot's going to happen. Let's put it that way.
Okay, I've never asked you this question, Gene. This is the seventh time you've been on the show, and this is the first time I'm going to ask you this question. I want you to retrospectively think back to 2015, and if we told you then, Gene Ho, celebrity photographer to the stars and the Democrats and every the darling of the left, if we had told you that this Gene Ho would end up, A, becoming a Christian, B, becoming a conservative, C, becoming the personal photographer Donald Trump, traveling around, you know, with Diamond and Silk and General Flynn and speaking at conservative events like Rock the Red and around the country, what would you have said?
I would have never, ever, ever believed it. I would have never. And the thing is, and if you listen to the stories, it's amazing how many of our stories is the same. If you talk to Roger Stone, if you talk to Lindell, who named the day that he basically surrendered himself to Jesus, I believe his date was February 18th. 2017, I believe. He said it on stage.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was February 14th, 2018. And you have other ones that uncannily sound very, very familiar. Roger Stone was another one who had a story similar to that. Lynn Wood was another one. My point is, with all of this, is it's interesting that God is using the most unlikely people to fulfill his will, starting with Donald Trump. If you said, like, that's why the left said, oh, no, God can't possibly be using Donald Trump, or God can't possibly be using Mike Lindell. He was a druggie or whatever. Everyone here knows me halfway decent. At least your audience does about me. But I'm telling you that in 2015, before all this happened, I was like the most unlikely candidate that you could ever imagine speaking in behalf of all this stuff. So it is. It's wonderful to see God's hand in motion. It really is.
It's amazing. Mine was 1997. You know, I was a black guy, Democrat. And it's funny. The very same people that say, well, God can't use Gene Ho or God can't use Donald Trump, they want God to use them. You know,
right.
So Gene, in closing, and thanks for coming on, and before you tell people how to contact you, give a message to America. Tell America, give a message to this listening audience of encouragement, because with all this bad stuff going down, and it just looks like here everything's just collapsing around us, but it really isn't. It kind of is, but we know God's got it under control. but it's you know, it looks bad. So give a message of encouragement to the listening audience.
Right. It's very simple. It's like this. When Donald Trump, after the election, so-called lost, we thought this movement was cooked. We thought we were all done. This isn't working, and that's it. It's working even better than before. Who knew? Who knew that for us to get people, leaders such as Mike Lindell, for us to get leaders such as General Flynn, it took Donald Trump so-called losing for the nation to rally around these new leaders. So whatever is happening, God's obviously in control, because if it wasn't, it would not turn out the way it is right now, where we are stronger than ever before.
Well, thank you for that, those words of encouragement. And tell people how they can contact you and about your book.
Yes, the book is Trumpography. Check it out. The best way to get a hold of me is my website is GeneHo.com. So GeneHo.com. And also check out GeneHo for FOR, Mayor.com. Make a donation, $10, $5, whatever. Every little bit helps.
Thank you, Gene. Continued success on your tour. You know, you're always welcome on the show. So I'll be checking within you sometime soon, and enjoy you and Nadine's family. Enjoy the summer.
Okay. Love you and talk to you soon.
Same here. Thank you. Gene Ho, everybody. President Trump, actually Donald Trump's personal photographer. Presidential election. Gene Ho, during the 2016 presidential election, Donald Trump's personal photographer, now the photographer for Diamond and Silk. And he's out there doing his thing for the conservative Christian movement. And as you just heard him say, we are not getting weaker. We are not falling. We are not crumbling. We are getting stronger. And when Donald Trump comes back, which he will come back, there will be more behind him and more leaders and more people who are going to be willing to stand up and fight for this country, willing to stand up and fight for God, family, country, and Constitution. And speaking along those lines, imagine at the age of 22 years old receiving a political appointment to serve in the White House from President Ronald Reagan. So after that, you return home and move up the political ladder, and you eventually serve three times in the Colorado State House of Reps, representative, and twice in the Colorado Senate. Then you become a founding member and chairman of the Stop Hillary PAC, which was renamed the Committee to Defund the President. After Donald Trump was elected in 2016, to defend the president. I am sorry, Ted. The committee to defend the president, not defund, to defend the president in 2016. And now he's the chairman of the committee to defeat the president. You can find it at stopjoe.com. I love that. Ted Harvey lit it up down at Rock the Red talking about cancel culture. And we're going to get into that because a lot of people don't understand what cancel culture is. But here's all you need to know about cancel culture. If they don't like what you say, they cancel you, which means they take you off of social media. They take you off of whatever you do. If you're a stand-up comic and you say something they don't like, you don't work again. That's cancel culture. And we cannot have this. Okay? So I'm welcome to the show, Senator Ted Harvey.
Good evening, my friend. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
I thank you very much for coming on, because, boy, you were so powerful in your talk about cancel culture. So let's start there, and then we can get into getting Joe out of the White House. But please explain to people what cancel culture is and why it was something that you thought you needed to address.
Well, cancel culture is where you cannot express your political beliefs on the public square of social media, or else you will be removed from social media or shadow banned at the very least from social media, and the danger that comes along with that. And now what you see is happening, what was announced today with PayPal, that they are going to be going through everybody's social media posts and seeing if somebody who is anti-government is a threat to our society and therefore have to have their financial abilities to transfer money via PayPal taken away. And does that mean that you and I are going to be on that list because you and I disagree with this administration when it comes to defending our sovereign borders or looking into the 2020 elections or saying that young kids who will never die of coronavirus should be wearing masks or have to get a forced vaccine of an experimental drug into their bodies in order to go back to school. If we come out and we say those things, does that make us a threat to society and therefore the administration will remove us from social media and PayPal will take us away from having access to our funds at PayPal? That is what cancel culture is, and that should scare everybody. And I don't care whether you are a Democrat or a Republican or unaffiliated, that should scare everybody. And if anybody was doing that to a Democrat, I would be outraged that they were doing that to a Democrat. I'm a civil libertarian, and I passionately believe you have a right to say whatever you want to say. I mean, I agree with it, but I will, you know, as the quote goes, I will defend your right to say it. And that's not where the left is right now. The left believes that if you disagree with them, you are evil and you must be removed from society. And that is a scary place for America to be, because whenever any government has had the power to remove their opponent's ability to speak their mind, dangerous things have happened to the society. History has proven that out time and time again. So we need to stand bold, and we need to be pushing out against it.
Absolutely. And you brought up a very interesting point, Senator Harvey, because they will eat their own. Like stand-up comics, I think Dave Chappelle, Seinfeld, there have been all kind of people that felt the sting of cancel culture because they said something that the people on the left didn't like and they wanted to cancel them. It's just like, and by the way, if this were to continue, they'd end up canceling themselves, but they would have gotten rid of us first. Is this starting to catch on? Like, are we starting to catch on? You know what I mean? Are people starting to catch? It's like critical race theory. For a while, people thought critical race theory was so ridiculous, they didn't pay attention to it. And now they realize they better. This is so stupid. But now it's really starting to catch on. It's really started back in the 1990s. It's really been gaining steam. Are people starting to see the light about this?
I think conservatives and your average American is starting to tune in to what's going on. For so many, you know, average Americans out there, conservative, moderate Democrats and moderate unaffiliated, they're just living their lives. They're just going to work. They're raising their kids. They're going to sporting practices and sporting games and just living their lives. They're not focusing on politics. But now they're seeing how radical the left has become and how it is impacting their kids.
Well, it seems like right in the middle of the word kids, Senator Harvey has disappeared. So hopefully we'll be able to get him back. But I do want to, in the meantime, just dig a little bit on this cancel culture and explain again what I said earlier in the show for people who didn't hear it. It's really an attempt to boot people out of professional or social circles, and they're going to do it on social media, they'll do it online, and they'll do it person. You know what I mean? They want to stop free speech. It's a form of censorship. And as I said before, it's kind of like they used to say you're busted, like if they catch you with a woman that's not your wife or a husband, or, you know, that whole social thing. And then you're outed, you know, they'll out you over this or out you over that. This is to cancel you. And again, it's an insidiously clever way to boycott people, shut them down, and try to force a change of thought to bring about a change of action. See, and if they can't change your thought process, which doesn't lead to a change of action, then they want to cancel you completely. It could cost you your job. It could cost you your fame. It could cost you a lot of money, because a lot of the people they go after are public figures, because they figure if we get the big ones, if we get the public figures and we can cancel them, then the foot soldiers will fall in line. I do believe we have Senator Harvey back. Senator Harvey, you know, I get very concerned when people disappear on the air, because I really think the left has snatched them.
Well, obviously the NSA didn't like what I was saying, so I apologize for that.
Right. Well,
this
is getting, this stuff is getting serious because Big Brother is watching and Big Brother is listening. So you were saying that people on the right are catching on and some of the people on the left that it has stung. But what about the people, just your everyday useful idiot on the left? Are they picking this up? And if not, what do we have to do to get them there?
You know, I don't call them useful idiots. I call them Americans that are living their lives and going to work and raising families and doing what most people do. They don't focus on politics the way the radical left does. It's a religion to them. But they're seeing how the radical left is now impacting their kids. And it doesn't matter whether they're unaffiliated or moderate Democrats. They're seeing how this is impacting their kids with critical race theory and boys being in girls' sports and things like that. And they're waking up to what's going on. And that's why you see these moms, I call them pissed off moms, at school boards all across the country that are rising up against the critical race theory stuff. And they're throwing school board elected officials out of office. And I think there is a groundswell happening across this country that the Democrats don't appreciate. I don't think the rhinos and the establishment appreciate it, and certainly the media doesn't. And they're going to have a rude awakening, I think, on November of 2022, because there's going to be an uprising across this country, and Democrats are going to be thrown out of office up and down the ballot, left and right.
I certainly hope you're right. And speaking of who the useful idiots are, I tend to agree with you. See, I don't call them useful idiots if they don't know. Like, you brought up a very good point. There's a lot of people on the left or liberals or even rhinos or whatever you want to call them who are out there living their lives, making their money, taking care of their families, working at jobs, trying to live the American dream. They may not know what they're involved with. The ones I call useful idiots are the ones that know. It's been brought to their attention. They understand. You're following Marxists. You prove to them that some of these people are flat-out communists. You tell them about Antonio Gramsci. You tell them about political correctness, critical race theory. You tell them about they're trying to topple the Constitution, get rid of First and Second Amendment, and they stick there anyway. Those are the ones I call the useful idiots. Now, along the lines of that, Stop Hillary PAC and the Committee to Defend the President, which has led to the Committee to Defeat this President. Will you please tell us about the progression of that and how you got involved and why?
Sure. Well, I was in the state Senate and was in the legislature for 13 years and was term limited in 2014. And some folks that I've been working with at national politics, we got together and we thought that we needed to start a pact to make sure that Hillary Clinton never stepped foot in the White House again. So in 2013, we started the Stop Hillary PAC because even though she hadn't announced her candidacy, she was just citizen Hillary. We were confident that she was going to get in and the Democrats were going to do everything they could to lie, cheat, and steal to make sure that she got in there. And we started this PAC, and who would have ever guessed that it would have turned into this humongous national political organization that it became. Surprisingly, there was a lot of people that wanted to stop Hillary. And so they joined our PAC, and we were very, very influential in the 2016 elections with the Benghazi hearings and everything. We were leading the effort on that nationally. And then when Trump won and we saw the left rioting on the streets of America the very next day, and the media wants everybody to forget about that, but there were spontaneous, quote-unquote, spontaneous uprisings on college campuses all across the country the very next day. We were very well organized and very well orchestrated. We were like, we've got to continue our efforts, and so we changed the name of the PAC to the Committee to Defend the President. And over the course of that 4 years of the Trump administration, we became one of the largest pro-Trump PACs in the country. And we were really the only PAC out there that was on the cutting edge, that was pushing back against Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and the FBI and the CIA and the Mueller investigation. And the RNC wasn't doing it. The Republicans in the House and the Senate wasn't doing it. Our PAC was the one that was forcing the issue. And then we got involved in the 2018 elections and spent a lot of money to take back the Senate and try to get President Trump reelected in 2020. And when Biden was sworn in, I don't say when Biden won, I say when Biden was sworn in.
There you go.
On January 20th, we changed the name of the PAC to the Committee to Defeat the President, because it is my goal to stop this administration from pushing their radical leftist agenda down the throats of Americans. And again, we're one of the only groups that are out there that are pushing back against the Biden administration, and the RNC isn't doing it. And short of a handful of Republicans in the House and the Senate in Washington, D.C., there's nobody else out there. So we're trying to do it, and we encourage your listeners to go to our website at stopjoe.com and learn more about us.
Absolutely. Along those lines, please tell the people, in your educated opinion, where are we now with these people in the White House? How much trouble are we in, and what can people do individually to try and stem this tide or reverse this curse?
Well, I think the most important thing you can do is put your pressure on your state legislators to pass meaningful election reform laws. That's Republicans and Democrats alike. You see what's happening in Texas, where the Democrats are running away, but they have to vote on it. We need to put pressure on all of our elected officials to push for photo ID in every single state, to make sure that there is no ballot harvesting in any state, and that if we do have mail-in ballots, that we check very strictly the signatures on every one of those ballots to make sure that the person who is voting is actually the person whose name is on the ballot. Common sense things like that. Those aren't racist things. Those are common sense voter security issues. And the Democrats know that they can't win if they can't cheat. And that's why they are gnashing their teeth right now, because 40 states now have photo ID in place. And we need to make sure that happens in Texas and in other states where we have the ability to get those bills passed. That's first and foremost, is put pressure on those legislators. And, you know, God bless the founders who put in place the filibuster, because that is stopping the radical leftists in Washington, D.C. from passing their legislative agenda and getting the bills to the president's desk for him to sign. We've got to rally the forces. We have to mobilize the army across the country, to the army of patriotic, God-fearing Americans, to get out and vote in November of 2022 and take back the House and take back the Senate, which I am confident we are going to do, and then make sure that we get a conservative in the White House, not just a Republican, but a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it'll be Donald Trump, but we are not. We are not the PAC to support Donald Trump, but I do believe it will be him. And I think if he gets in, there's nobody that can beat him. And I honestly don't think there's anybody that could beat most of the Republican field that would get in if Donald Trump didn't do it. So I feel confident about where we are going into the next two election cycles, and we are 100% committed in saving the Republic.
Thank you. My final question to you, Senator Harvey, election integrity. Is there anything we can do? Like, we can't twist the judge's arms and we can't force things, but is there anything we can do to try and make sure, from the local level to the state level, which would eventually take on to the federal level, getting a fair, making sure this election is going to be fair from now on?
Well, my PAC has spent a lot of money to make sure that these election reform bills are getting passed across the country. We were on the ground in Georgia in the special election in January. We won two important lawsuits in Georgia to make sure that our poll watchers were able to watch the ballots as they came in. We won those lawsuits in both of the election supervisors. One was fired because of it. Another one had resigned because of it. That's what it's going to take. It's going to take aggressive measures on the ground to force these Democrat election supervisors in every state across the country to follow the law. and do what they're supposed to be doing and allow poll watchers to go in. So, again, put pressure on the legislatures to pass meaningful election reform, but get involved and be a poll watcher at the local level to make sure that the Democrat in these Democrat counties are doing what they should be doing and making sure that every ballot is counted that is legal and making sure that ballots that aren't legal are thrown out.
Thank you for that answer, Senator Harvey. And please tell people once again how they can reach you, reach your PAC, get information, and get on board. And thank you for being a beacon of truth and light here. There are more voices like yours are needed.
Well, thank you, buddy. You were wonderful. God bless you. Go to our PAC website, the stopjoe.com. You can see all the commercials that we've been running around the country during the last election cycles and what we're doing right now. You can read all the op-eds that I've been writing and papers all across the country, and go there and hit that donation page and help us out. You can follow us at defeat underscore Joe, and then you can follow us on Twitter, follow us on Getter, and I encourage everybody to get on Getter, which is an alternative to Twitter, and follow us on Facebook as well. We've got a million followers there, and we'd love to have you following up on all of these platforms.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. Always welcome to come back on the show, Colorado State Senator Ted Harvey. I love that.
Thank you, buddy. God bless.
You're welcome. God bless you and your family. I love that. StopJoe.com. I don't know about you people, but boy, I just had a ball tonight. Once we got rolling, we got rolling. I want to thank Tracy Beans, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. I want to thank Gene Ho. And I want to thank Senator Ted Harvey for coming on and trying to set the record straight on what we need to do, what we can do on our own reconnaissance, on our own to save America, because we can't just wait for Donald Trump to get back in the White House. We need to get involved right here, right now. As I said, just flip one. Just get one. Get blue to red. Do you realize, let's just say if 100, or let's just go 60,000 people. If 60,000 people flipped blue to red, that would be 120, and who knows what they would get. So I thank everybody for listening tonight. We'll be back next Monday. The show will either be on conservative women, concerned conservative women speak out on hot button issues, or it'll be about election integrity. I'll know later in the week. I thank everybody for listening in. Again, I thank my guests. You're all wonderful. Lieutenant Flynn gave us a long time. I thank him for that, Lieutenant General Flynn. Thank you, Tracy Beans, Gene Ho, and Ted Harvey. And thank you for listening. This show archives. It archives so you can take this show and listen to it again or send the link to your friends. blogtalkradio.com/patriotnation. blogtalkradio.com/patriotnation. They can hear the show. You can find the link there if you don't see it on Facebook or in another social media, because we need to get this show out to people and do all we can one at a time to help save America. So God bless you. God bless your family. God bless America, and looking forward to catching up with you again next Monday.